I'm going to move on reasonably swiftly and promptly because I know some of you have potential clash with the Prudential later on. So we'll launch into it without further ado. Today we have speaking for us Geraint, who will do the key numbers, Christina, who will pick up the core UK business, Milena has been recently promoted to head of UK and EU insurance, who will talk about our international insurance operations and price comparison operations, before we do a bit of a deep dive on loans with Scott and Duncan, respectively CEO and CFO of our loans business, telling you more about what we're trying to achieve and what we've achieved so far. We're not intending to do this level of depth on loans in general, but there has been a fair amount of interest from our shareholders, so we thought we'd give you the chance to understand it and ask questions. As well as the team on the podium today, we've got quite a lot of people in the audience. We've got Annette, our chair. We've got Rachel, our chief actuary. James, our chief risk officer. Costantino, head of Conte. And Chris, who's the UK ops manager. So if you're short of people to ask questions to afterwards, feel free to ask to those managers as well as us. Over to you, Geraint.
Thanks, David. Morning, everyone. I'll spend some time on the key numbers, as David says. Another increase in profit, lots going on. Then I'll move on to highlight another very strong capital position and finish up with news of the increased and record interim dividend. The usual highlight slide to kick things off. As you can see, another solid set of results for the first half. At the top, we continue to grow, both customer numbers and turnover up. You'll note the percentages are a bit lower than the previous year, and that mainly reflects a broadly flat core business, which Christina will talk about. Our pre-tax profit was up 4% to 220 million. That's a record for a first half and comes after the adverse Ogden impact, which I'll talk about shortly. EPS was up 2%, 63 pence, a slightly lower increase than the pre-tax profit increase due to a higher number of shares in issue. Return on equity, also strong in the high 40s, and the reduction over last year is entirely down to Ogden. The strong capital position means we've been able to increase our interim dividend, despite the 2% growth in EPS by 5%. The payout will be 63 pence. And after that dividend is accounted for, we maintain the very strong solvency position. Solvency ratio is 190%. And I don't normally like to have red arrows on my highlight slide, but the reason they're there is almost entirely down to Ogden. So let me talk to you a bit about what's happening there. I'm sure you'll all know that the rate was confirmed a month or so back at minus 0.25. And that rate is firstly very disappointing and is secondly a bit below what we previously assumed, which you'll recall was 0%. The pre-tax total impact of moving from 0 to minus 0.25 will be 50 to 60 million. And as you can see, we've taken £33 million of that charge in the first half. And the impact on ROE and EPS is also shown there. We're retiring our Ogden slide for 5 years, pleased to know. Let's take a look at the growth stats across the group. And it's nice this time to see a full slide of green arrows again. You can see at the top, as we moved our rates in the UK up ahead of the market over the past 12 months, our rate of growth has slowed. And our core business is only marginally ahead of where it was 12 months ago. Our household and international insurers, on the other hand, continue to grow very nicely. Household is nearly 20% bigger, moving towards the nice 1 million policies milestone. And international insurance in aggregate saw over 20% growth, with those percentages accelerating in the first half. And we're nearly now at 1.4 million customers outside the UK. Comparison turnover was up 8%, helped by a very strong H1 from Confused.com. And finally, our loans balances reached £421 million at 30th of June. That's double the level a year ago and about 40% higher than the end of 2018. More detail on all that throughout the presentation. Let's get into the profits, see what's behind the record first half result. UK insurance was up around £8 million or 3%. And as you can see, that's after the £33 million Ogden hit that I mentioned previously. Underlying profit was therefore quite strongly ahead, more like 16% up half year on half year. And that bigger than usual underlying move was due to some very strong back year loss ratio development in the first half, which, despite keeping our reserve margin flat versus 6 months ago, has led to a more positive back year booked loss ratio movement than we would normally expect to see in a half-year period, and we'd be positively surprised if that happened again in the second half. Household delivered a profit of £4 million, decent turnaround on last year's weather-impacted loss of £2 million, and that comes on the back of the continued strong growth. International insurance was £2 million lower half-year on half-year, and there are two parts to that. Firstly, the European businesses, which grew very strongly and delivered a higher profit, £4 million versus £3 million, but a higher loss ratio at Elephant in the US led the result there to be slightly worse. Comparison profit was at £7 million, more than double the H1 2018 result, and again, a large part of that is down to a very strong performance in H1 from Confused.com, where profits were up 50%. Admiral Loans reported a loss of £4 million, which has improved half-year on half-year, despite the strong growth, as the interest income on the portfolio continues to build. And finally, the other line, which is up a few million pounds since H1 last year, and as you see in the bullet point, the share scheme charge was the main factor there. And just to add a bit more colour on the share scheme, the accounting cost, and remember most of it isn't cash, is impacted by a number of factors, including the number of shares that we expect to vest and, of course, the share price. And between 30th of June 18 and 30th of June 19, the share price increased by £3, and also the financial metrics that drive the variable part of the scheme have also delivered strongly, and those two factors lead to the higher cost in H1. Moving on to talk about the capital position. I don't have too much to say on this slide. It looks pretty consistent with the position 6 months ago and is very satisfactory at this point. The solvency ratio is 190% post-dividend, which is a few points down on the year-end. It remains elevated in advance of the internal model application and hopefully approval in due course. And as you can see in the bullet, the Ogden impact cost us about 5 percentage points of solvency. And if you exclude that, we're pretty much flat versus half-year last year and year-end. There's no change at this stage in the basis of the calculation, and there's no new news at this point on internal model, which continues to progress. And hopefully we'll give you a slightly fuller update on the internal model when we do our full year results in March. My final section looks at the interim dividend, another record half-year payout. And the strong solvency position has meant we're able to pay out all of our H1 post-tax profit and increase our dividend by 5% to 63 pence per share. The payout ratio is obviously a bit higher than usual, and so don't get used to it. Last half year, we paid out 97%. There's no change to the policy, no change to the philosophy, and the relevant dates are shown on the slide. That's it from me, so let me try and give you a few key messages from my section. Continued growth, a bit more muted in the UK, but strong elsewhere. Higher profits, and materially higher profits on a pre-Ogden basis. And to round off, a higher and record interim dividend with a maintained and strong solvency position. I shall pass you to Cristina to talk about the UK.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to talk about the results for the UK insurance operation, focusing mostly on motor. On a nutshell, good set of results with an increase in profit. Despite the change in the Ogden rate, this is down to high back year releases, which I think is an indication of the strength of our underwriting capabilities. Relatively flat growth, which is an indication of our approach, very prudent, which tends to prioritize margin over volume. And in terms of household results, we have seen good growth and an increase in profit. Now, let's focus on prices in the market. We have seen premiums coming down during 2018 and the first quarter of 2019. And we have started to see a change in the trend in the second quarter of this year. You can see in the first graph, these are market data. These are indexes that reflect changes in the market. In the red bars, you have Confused data. It only focuses on new business. And what we have seen in Q2 is an increase of 3% versus Q1. When you look at the ABI data that looks at new business and also renewals, what you see in Q2 is actually prices being flat. So early and small signs of possible a change in the trend, and it's very pleasing for us to see the market reacting and starting to increase prices. However, there is still a big lag with claims inflation, so we will expect the market to continue to put prices up. If we move to Admiral prices, you can see in the second graph our time stop. And this chart reflects how we behave in price comparison versus competition. It's indexed to January 2017. What you see in the graph is we started putting prices up a year ago, and we have continued doing so in the first half of this year. We put prices up by about low to mid single digits. And recently, due to the change in Ogden, we also have increased prices by an additional 1%. Second half of the year, we expect to continue putting prices up, and as I mentioned, we hope the market to continue doing the same. Now, let's move on to our claims results. The graph that you have here reflects data from the market, and the trends that we see in the first half of 2019 are very similar to what we saw in 2018. Basically, flat frequency and an increase in severity. As Admiral, we're experiencing very similar trends, and we also expect the market and for Admiral to continue seeing similar trends in the second half. However, there are a number of changes in regulation that might have an impact. I'm going to talk about three. The first one is the change in the Ogden rate. As mentioned, we have increased prices, and we expect our competitors to either have increased prices too or to do so very soon. Secondly is the whiplash reform that we expect that will happen in about a year. I want to highlight that there is a lot of uncertainty, both in timing, but also in the actual impact that the reform is going to have. When this was first announced about 2 years ago, the market estimated the savings in the cost of the claim to be around £30 to £40 per policy. However, as you can see in the graph on the right, there has been a very strong decrease in the frequency of these type of claims. So the impact is going to be less than initially anticipated. But secondly, we don't yet know how claimants and how lawyers are going to react to it. There could be an increase in other type of claims that are not covered inside the whiplash reform. So with this uncertainty, we don't expect the market to discount prices much until there is more clarity in timing, but also in the actual impact. And the final change that we can see in the market is the results of the FCA market study on prices. We hope to know more about it in the next 2 months. Moving on to our own loss ratios results. You can see in the graph, not very well, but let me highlight that you can definitely see the total movement since the first projection of accident year. You also have in the packs, in the brackets, you have the movement in the past 6 months. In terms of reserve releases, as Kevin has been mentioning, it has been very positive, or we have seen very positive prior year development in the first half of the year. Our releases are around 22%, and 5% has been the impact of Ogden. Overall, we still hold a very prudent and significant margin, which is relatively flat from a year ago and is slightly higher than 6 months ago. Now, before I move into the household results, I want to talk about other revenue. We have included a graph that shows the results that we have seen in other revenue for the past 15 years. Two things I want to highlight: lots of movements up and down, mostly down to changes in our reinsurance agreement, but also changes in product. Second thing I will highlight is that overall, there is a very clear declining trend since 2011, when there was a peak of £84 per vehicle. Today, we're seeing this number to be around mid-60s, and if you make it net of the impact of changes in the reinsurance agreement, it's actually £58 down from the previous year. So what is happening at the moment on this measure? Well, a couple of pressure. First, coming from more sales being closed online, where we sell less ancillaries. And secondly, pressure coming from changes in regulation. I will highlight the IDD, the Insurance Distribution Directive. Going forward, we expect to still see these trends, and also the whiplash reform might have an impact on the margin that we make on the motor legal ancillary product, as the cost of it might go up. So overall, there is a lot of uncertainty. It's hard for us to estimate what is going to be the actual impact, but I think in the next couple of years, we're going to see a decrease of a few pounds. Now, moving on into household results, healthy growth of around 20%, both in customers and in turnover. Very pleased to see that this growth has been fueled by the growth of our direct channel. We've seen our multi-cover proposition, which is the cross-sell to our motor book to household policies, increasing. And we've also seen our InstaQuote proposition, which is the direct quote that allows customers to get a price with just four questions, and we see an increase in the take-up. So very good to see the growth. Also, positive results after a good year in terms of weather. So in summary, for motor, good growth in profits, despite Ogden. As I say, this is a credit of the strength of our underwriting capabilities. Very pleased to see the development of the prior years. Very flat, very modest growth as a reflection of our prudent approach. And in terms of household, good to see a strong growth. Now, before I move on, I just want to highlight that these results are a credit to the trust of our customers. We focus very much on delivering the best service every year, and we continue to improve. And secondly, our staff, I already highlighted this, but we are very proud to see how happy our staff is in Admiral, and all of these results are a credit to them. So that's it from me, and now I'll leave you with Milena, who's going to talk more about the results of our international operations and price comparison.
Thank you, Cristina. And good morning, everybody. So today I will talk to you about international insurance, as usual, and price comparison side. Starting with international insurance, I'm delighted to say that once again, we've seen a very strong growth across all the operation in Europe and in U.S., with particularly ConTe and L'Olivier growing very fast and celebrating premium milestone of 150 million, respectively. The total international insurance result reflected profit in Europe, offset by an increase in the current year claims ratio in U.S., and overall resulted in a 2.7 million pound loss. The European operation, while growing very strongly, also managed to report a record profit for the first half, and this is particularly thanks to the contribution of ConTe and Admiral Seguros. We've also seen in Europe a positive development of premium underwriting year loss ratio. This is on the back of continuous effort in innovating in pricing, improving anti-fraud capability, and exporting best practice in underwriting across the countries. And all these results are based on an unchanged, if not strengthened, level of conservatism in reserves. There are some positives on Elephant as well, notably an 11% growth of vehicle on covers and a further 2 percentage point reduction in the expense ratio. Unfortunately, this was offset by an increase of 5 percentage points in the claims ratio for the current year. The Elephant team responded to this by increasing further pricing in Q2, particularly for the segments that were showing more poor results. And in the next 6 months, we'll continue to protect the claims ratio, if needed, at the expense of growth, and also trying to continue to push the expense ratio further down. So, as I mentioned in the past, and as you can see from this set of results that combine very strong growth and a relatively flat bottom line, our principal aim at this stage of the story of international operation is to build economy of scale. That's where we put the most of our effort in the last period. And this is based on a very simple belief. We do have already an advantage in loss ratio, or we are building it in the less mature business. And with more sizable books, we will be able to deliver substantial profit to the group in the short term, short, medium term. And this last slide on international insurance is the results of this effort. So as you can see, all our cost metrics are trending in the right direction, with significant improvement in expense ratio, cost per policy, and call per customer, as more of our customers decide to interact with us on our portal online. And we are pursuing this efficiency without renouncing to invest in our people, in our brands, and in our platforms that are evolving continuously. In Italy, for example, we invest more significantly, increasing media investment in a new TV campaign with a very strong testimonial, Mr. Conti, that is probably the best and the more recognized showman in Italy. And we had very good return on this media investment. And L'Olivier, as you can see in the table on the right, is pioneering our effort in producing and providing more and more feature aligned to our customer. And we continue to release new ones as we speak. So moving now to price comparison side. The first half of the year has seen very pleasing results for us rather than LELANX that were growing both in turnover and in profit in what remain challenging markets that are less mature than U.K. Everywhere, we're continuing our crusade to empower customers to do better and easier choice. This translates in Spain in providing more accurate price to the customer in the final part of the quote. That seems very obvious to us in U.K., but it's very far to be market standard in Spain. Customer reacting very positive with improved NPS score, and more insurer in the panel are embracing this proposition. We are also empowering customer to do a broader range of choice on our site, and this means product diversification with special focus on the finance vertical and mortgage in particular in Spain and energy in France. Moving now to U.S., Compare have seen fell in loss to $3.5 million in the first half of the year. This is on the back of challenging market condition, as we mentioned in the past. As a consequence of that, we amended our forecast and our projection for the future to reflect a more conservative view of the speed of adoption of this new acquisition channel by U.S. consumer. Consequently, we have written down, in a typical conservative Admiral style, the carrying value of Compare.com by £25.7 million. The most notable change in this period was a substantial cut of overhead cost. This was executed very effectively. We retained all the key personnel, as well as served our customer and our partner well throughout the period. As a result of this cost cut, as well as the improvement in acquisition cost, we expect for the second half of the year a materially lower loss for Compare. Back to U.K. now. Confused had a very pleasing half year, growing 14% in turnover and also with a 50% increase in profit. This was on the back of continued effort in improving our proposition for the customer and our product. Beyond the also very strong performance in motor, Confused also increased their share in household comparison. We strengthened the B2B relationship, as well as seen an increase in brand awareness and also an increase in effectiveness of media spending with the new TV ads. To summarize, we've seen a pleasing half year for a price comparison site, led by very strong half year for Confused and with challenging condition in the U.S. We've seen a very strong growth across all international operation and profit from Europe once again. Thank you very much. I now hand over to Duncan and Scott that is going to talk to us about a newer but already very exciting part of Admiral business.
Good morning. Thank you, Milena, for the introduction. As some of you know, I joined Admiral 3.5 years ago, following a 15-year career to that point in U.K. retail banking, most recently with Lloyds Banking Group, where I was focused on the development of new consumer finance propositions. And prior to that, at the Royal Bank of Scotland, where I worked across all retail products, including periods in pricing and finance, and as part of the executive team driving the digital and technology-focused Retail Future Bank programme. So why was I attracted to Admiral Loans? Why was I attracted to Admiral? Two reasons. The first is the company. As we all know, Admiral is a special and outlier insurance company. So the opportunity to leverage those capabilities to create a special and outlier loans business was a huge pull factor. The second was the market, or more precisely, the opportunity that currently exists in the personal loans and car finance market in the U.K., where I believe Admiral can better price risks, be more efficient, and drive more consistent customer outcomes. I'll come back to this in a minute. So how are we doing? Since launch in 2017, we've had cumulative investment of £22 million. We've originated over £500 million of loans to over 60,000 customers. And at the end of June 19, have a stock position of £421 million. About half of our loans are for the purpose of financing cars. And around 20% of those are already to Admiral Insurance customers. During this period, we've won multiple awards voted for by our customers. And we have a fantastic team of people, 140 in total, based back in Cardiff, who have been recruited approximately 50% from industry and 50% internally from Admiral. We play in the prime space, and we currently have a market share of 1.5%. And we've also invested heavily in our technology, which allows us to acquire 99% of our loans fully digitally. And of those, 85% come through fixed cost channels. So at this point in time, we are already an established lender, but we realise there is a lot to do. So over the next 1 to 2 years, the goal is to create a differentiated and special lender for Admiral's shareholders. The UK loan market is large and established. And as I mentioned earlier, there are a series of trends occurring that present an opportunity for Admiral. Firstly, with distribution, we are seeing a shift to channels where Admiral has historically been strong, notably price comparison, but also new credit score-based marketplaces like ClearScore. 75% of personal loans in the UK are already now acquired digitally, and over 20% come via these channels. We expect the share of these channels to continue to grow. Secondly, we are seeing a pull from both distributors and from customers for improved pricing accuracy and acceptance certainty. There is a gradual shift from a representative rate model to a pre-approved guaranteed rate model. The chart in the top right gives a real example of a price comparison ranking first on chance of approval, despite there being lower priced representative rate offers available. We think we can be a beneficiary from this, given the group's pricing expertise and our new flexible technology in the loans business. Finally, with used car finance, some of you may have seen the recent media linked to the FCA review. Well, due to both these regulatory changes and changes in consumer behaviour, where more and more people are shopping online for their cars and subsequently for their finance, we see in time acquisition gradually moving away from point of sale traditional channels where there are high cost APRs to subsidise the high cost dealer commissions. So here's what you can expect from us in the next 1 to 2 years. As I said, our focus is to create a truly industry leading lender. And leaning on the Admiral winning formula, we see the following four capabilities as key to achieving this. The first is risk selection and data analytics. This is the single most important capability. The data advantage of traditional players is reducing. So our focus will be centred around using established data sources in a more granular way and using new data sources like open banking to better price risks. We have an obsession with the little details, and our technology allows us to make rapid changes. So we believe this combination will help us find the pockets of higher pricing returns. The second is expense efficiency. We wouldn't be an Admiral UK business without an industry-leading expense ratio. You can see from the chart, our run rate fixed costs have already reduced from 3.7% of stock balance in June 18 to 2.1% in June 19. And as our scale grows, we expect this operational efficiency to continue. The third is product development. We see an opportunity to create more flexible and convenient products for our customers, in particular by bringing together car insurance and car finance into one interaction where customers can directly and conveniently arrange all of their car needs. And finally, with technology, we started with an end-to-end industry-proven system and are in the process of evolving to a microservices architecture using best-of-breed components. And we have an H119 complete the first phase of this development with our new proprietary pricing system. So hopefully that's given you an overview of both the market and the business. I'd like to leave you with 2 points to summarise. Why will Admiral win in loans? The first is that using the latest technology, we will give customers better choices for car finance. And the second is we will have an obsession on data and pricing to better price risks and find the pockets of higher pricing returns. So with that, I'll pass you to Duncan to talk more about our funding and our performance.
Thank you, Scott. Good morning, everyone. My name is Duncan Russell. I'm the CFO of Admiral Loans. I joined Admiral about a year and a half ago. Prior to that, I was working in the Netherlands for a Dutch insurance company where I was responsible for corporate finance and strategy. And before that, I was based in London at JP Morgan, where I was a managing director. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the key financial highlights of the loans business. And I'll start in that context on the funding position. As you can see from this slide, of the 421 million loans outstanding at the half year, roughly 60% of those was funded on a senior secured basis via a banking warehouse structure. That's a standard facility for a lending business like ourselves and was put in place roughly 12 months ago. The remaining 40% has been funded by money provided to us by Admiral Group, who in turn have sourced that through a combination of drawing on credit facilities at the holding company and downstreaming it, or utilizing the insurance asset base. We believe that these two funding sources should be sufficient for the loans business to meet our near to medium term growth ambitions. While in the longer term, we'll naturally need to diversify further, and it's most likely we'll do that through capital market transactions, such as a public securitization or a debt issue. With respect to the capital position, Admiral Loans is part of a separate legal entity called Admiral Financial Services and is a consumer credit firm, which means that it does not have any material regulatory capital requirements of its own. However, within the group Solvency II ratio, we are added in, and the way that's done is via a notional solvency capital requirement calculated using banking Basel rules, which is broadly equivalent to 6% of the loans outstanding at any point in time. Just with respect to asset quality, as Scott mentioned, we are operating in the prime space. As an output, that means we're targeting annualized losses in the range of 1.5% to 2%, and an APR on the book in the mid to high single digits. From an input perspective, it means we're targeting customers who have a good credit history, have a certain minimum level of income, and a certain maximum level of debt. Now, over the past 12 to 18 months, we have been optimizing our credit rules, and that's been a function not only of the data and trends we've seen emerging in our own book, but also a realization that we are a new lender in the market, and we have looked to remove any concentrations that may emerge. In addition, we are aware of the macroeconomic background, and therefore have generally had a tightening bias on our credit rules over the last 12 to 18 months. As Scott mentioned, we have invested in technology, and recently we put in place our pricing capability, which allows us to price risk in a very granular manner and in a very rapid manner, and utilize some of the data sources which Scott mentioned earlier. From a provisioning perspective, we are utilizing IFRS 9. The total provision at the half year was 15.7 million. And some of you are probably aware that does recognize credit losses slightly earlier than the prior accounting standards. To put that into context, of the 15.7 million credit provision as of the half year, approximately 5.5 million related to what are known as stage one loans, which means that they're up to date and haven't experienced any credit deterioration. As you're aware, the half-year result for the loans business was a loss of 4.3 million, which is a slight improvement period on period. And we're guiding for that number to be in the high single-digit area for the full year, notwithstanding any significant change in the macroeconomic environment. As you can see from the charts, the loans balances have steadily increased over the past year and a half, and that's been a function of a stable level of new loan originations. We anticipate for the coming 2 years we'll also keep our new loan originations relatively stable. And that means that the total loan balances outstanding in 2 years' time should be in the range of 700 to 900 million. As Scott mentioned, there's a lot more to do. But as a team, myself, Scott, and a team back in Cardiff, are reasonably satisfied with the financial performance of the business so far. And we look forward to the future with optimism. And with that, I'll hand back to David to summarize.
Thank you very much, Duncan and Scott. I said we won't dive as deeply as that into loans in future, but I pray your indulgence for one extra page, which is to try and set the loans business a bit in the context of Admiral's aspiration and timeframe. So I look at the loans business with a goal of creating something Admiral-like in a few years' time. What do I mean by Admiral-like? I mean a special business in a difficult market. Loans is a difficult market. It's a commoditized product. There's lots of capacity. It's subject to exposure to macroeconomic cycles. But if you create a special business, you can still make good returns. How's this business going to be special? It's going to be special in risk selection. It's going to find ways of identifying overpriced risks. It took Admiral 5 to 7 years to beat the industry average loss ratio through a process of learning and applying those learnings. Doesn't happen overnight. It's going to do it through creative product innovation. This appears to be a commoditized market, but there are often opportunities to tweak a product to slightly differentiate. We did it ourselves with the 10-month product, and with multi-car and multi-cover, just gives the customer an extra reason for coming to us. Again, it takes time to develop those products. Tight expense control has always been part of the Admiral formula: low acquisition costs, low administration costs. I'm glad to say that I think the loans business is already demonstrating superior expense economics versus the average competitor in the lending market. Now, if over time we achieve these three goals, we get a business that establishes a track record of superior returns. If we do that, we can apply another part of the Admiral formula, which is working in partnership with third-party capital providers to increase the capital efficiency and the risk mitigation of our capital structure. That's something of a goal. We will do that in the way that Duncan described through securitization. We also might look for more innovative ways of doing that. I'm pleased to say we've done our first relatively small capital efficiency deal with one of our reinsurance partners to provide support for the lending operation. What would I like you to take away from this morning's presentation? I think three things, really. The loan business as an option on a potentially attractive business for the long term. Record European growth. We've got 209,000 more cars on cover than we had a year ago in Europe, and 125,000 of those came in the last 6 months. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, I think these results are a further demonstration of the strength and resilience of the core franchise. To see the back year loss ratios evolving as they are gives us confidence that we continue to beat the market collectively on that key loss ratio metric, and also our conservative approach to reserving that superior, to recognizing that superior performance means that we can deliver even in difficult times in the market. Thank you for your attention, and I'm going to open up for questions and answers. Do you want to go first?
Goldman Sachs. First, just on the U.K. motor environment, where do you see your sales being now in terms of the margin progression going into the second half? Do you think you've reached a drop now, or are you at a position where you can cover claims inflation? Then a couple of questions on the loan book as well. Could you just give a little bit more detail on what the financing arrangements there and how you see those developing in the medium term? And also, are there any synergies with the rest of the Admiral Group?
So Christina, you'll do the U.K. business and...
Yes. We believe there is still a gap to reach the claims inflation, so we will continue putting prices up. In terms of margin, as Geraint has said, in the first half of the year, we have experienced a particularly high back year releases, and we don't anticipate to continue with the trend in the second half.
Yeah, I think synergy. The first priority is to create a great lending business, as we've talked about in the script. In terms of synergy, I think about it in two, possibly three ways. The first way is the customer base. There's obviously 4 to 5 million insurance customers in the U.K. We estimate they've got about 9 billion pounds of car finance and personal loans. So we'd like to talk to them about giving them better solutions and better products. The second is data. We already see that in addition to credit data, the Admiral data does correlate well, and there's some insights that we'll aim to take over the next few years with that. And then the third is cultural. Admiral has quite a unique way of driving customer experiences, but also in terms of the granularity and frequency of pricing changes, and we're already inheriting some of that, so we see a synergy there as well.
Okay. Question was on financing. As we indicated in the slides, you can expect our balances to be around 700-900 million in 2 years' time. The reason we gave that was to help you frame the financing need, the capital need, and some sort of indication on the P&L as well. I indicated in the presentation that I felt that the current funding capabilities we had, which was the banking warehouse, which funds roughly 60% of those balances, and the remaining 40% being funded by a combination of credit lines and insurance assets, should be sufficient to meet those near-term needs, particularly at the bottom end and at the top end, probably with a small upscaling. Post that, any further growth above that would require, I believe, a diversification of funding, and would most likely be in the form of public securitization. The main barrier to achieving that will be track record and data, and that's also why it coincides nicely with the 2-year near-term needs, and then thereafter, when we've built up a track record over a 4 to 5 year period, tapping those public markets.
Hi, it's Ivan Bokhmat from Barclays. My first question would be on the reinsurance profit commissions. Maybe you could provide some outlook considering a creep up in the current year loss ratios. How should it work through the future years? And the second question I had also on loans, just to follow up, maybe you could provide some kind of bank comparisons in terms of the cost of risk and the cost income that you target for that business. What kind of ROE should we be expecting once you get to the 900 million loan balances target? Thank you.
Reinsurance commissions.
Profit commissions, the flow through into the accounts will be predominantly driven by how we release back year loss ratios. So the current years, we wouldn't expect those to feed into profits and for 2 or 3 or 4 years. So the next couple of years will be largely influenced by what happens on 14, 15, 16, 17, which appear to be quite profitable years and are moving into the territory where we're recognising profit commission. So that will influence the next couple of years. As I mentioned and Christina mentioned, the first half of this year has been particularly positive for those back years. I'd be positively surprised if it happened in the second half. But you do, you know, we do have a fairly strong track record of fairly strong back year reserve releases, and that does lead into profit commission as well.
On loans, I think we answered in two parts. So the expense part, I think the way to think about it is that the cost income of banks is in the order of 40 to 50. And we're already demonstrating sub 30 cost income ratios. I'm not aware of a low cost provider with the parent like Admiral coming into this market. A lot of the challenger banks come in on their own with heavy expense requirements, sometimes having to set up a bank before they can really get the revenue going. So I think from an expense perspective, we would see us getting certainly into the 20s.
From a return perspective, we on the economics, which I flagged in the presentation, a high single digit APR, an annualised cash loss of around about 2%, funding costs roughly similar to that, and a capital requirement of around about 6%. We think the IRR is around about 25% on the loans we're originating today.
Hi, don't mind me from Exxon BNP Paribas. Thank you for the questions, and thank you also for the detail on the loans book, which is very interesting. If I can ask three questions, if that's all right. Christina, you mentioned some of the headwinds on the other revenue per customer. I wonder if you might be able to flesh out in a little bit more detail why you see the IDD as being a headwind, and also how you see the whiplash reforms impacting the legal cover. Secondly, you've in the past indicated PYD might trend in the long-term average of about 20 points on the combined ratio. Do you still think that's a reasonable number, or should we be inferring that while next half won't be quite as good as this half, it's still going to be above that? And then finally, apologies for a slightly technical question, but if I look at the book loss ratio for the 2018 vintage, it started roughly the same place as 2014. It's had good development, but when you commuted 2014 in 2016, it was a little bit of a loss. I think it was a 30 million odd loss. If 2018 turns out to be similar to 2014 in terms of development, what sort of loss do you think that might mean on commutation? And indeed, would you consider not commuting it if there is a chunky loss? Thank you.
Do you want to do IDD and whiplash, and maybe Garrett might do commutation?
Yes. One thing I want to highlight is that despite the decrease that we have been seeing, so from the peak of 84 to where we are now, around 60, it has not stopped us from delivering good profits and good return year on year. So I think that's important to take into account. In regards to IDD and whiplash might increase the cost of delivering motor legal protection. This is an ancillary that we offer, and it's quite an important one. And if the cost increases, there might be pressure on the margin. Yeah, so that's the impact of whiplash. Second one is in terms of IDD, I would highlight it's not just the insurance distribution directories. In general, there is a trend to better disclosure, and IDD is just an indication. So there is a trend constantly, value measures, IDD, and many other reforms that would lead to different ways of selling products.
Question on reserve releases. We used to guide that 15% was a sort of a long-term average. And as we've updated the chart, it's headed more towards 20%. I think we commented earlier that the size of our margin is conservative and large. And I think if things develop as we would normally expect them to in the second half, you'd expect H2 to be pretty strong. So not in the 15 territory, probably closer to 20. The future will obviously depend on how claims develop. But I think 20 is probably a more reasonable guide for the very near term than 15, for sure. and commutations. That's a very valid point. If 2018's booked loss ratio progression looks like 2014, and we choose to commute it, then you might expect a similar accounting loss. I would just emphasize it's not a real loss. Obviously, 2014 now is, 2016, sorry, is booked at around about 90%, and so it was a very profitable year. And so the accounting loss that we recognize at that point of commutation has since unwound in full. And we would certainly expect that 2018 will be a profitable year, and we'll choose to make the commutation decision based on our expectation of the ultimate profit. And so if it looks to us like it's going to be a profitable year, then we'll probably do that commutation. And therefore, that might recognize a loss at that point. We'll decide that in 2020 or 2021, whenever that point comes.
Yeah, sorry, the gentleman there.
Hi, Ian Pearce from Barron. On the development, could you just give us some guide on what's led to that sort of extraordinary performance in terms of claims trends? And then secondly, on Ogden, on the sort of 20 to 30 million additional impact you're flagging from that, when should we expect that to sort of earn through the P&L? Thank you.
Prior year, it's more of the same sort of stuff that we'd normally expect to see. It's positive development of average cost of injury claims, and particularly large injury claims. We'd seen some different trends in our data over the past couple of years, a more stable development than we'd normally expect to see, and we'd normally expect to see continued releases over time. Those trends have reverted more towards normal over the past 6 or 9 months, and so our independent and external actuaries have started to take account of that more positive trend. And so you get effectively some of that stuff has been stored up, and so you get a bigger movement in the first half than you might normally see. So that's the prior year. What's the second part? Sorry. Ogden. Yeah, so we reckon the total cost will be 50 to 60 million. We've recognised 33 million in H1, and that's all in the form of lower reserve releases. The rest, 20 or so, will come through in lower profit commission, and it'll be over the next 2 or 3 years. So the individual 6-month impact will be pretty trivial, as I wouldn't expect us to actually flag it at this point. It'll just be lower profit commission.
Hello. Edward Morris, JP Morgan. A few questions on loans first, if I may, and then one on solvency. First, just when you talk about pricing and how you approach this, can you just explain how you go about this? Is this something where all of the differentiation on pricing comes through the APR? And can you offer a similar level of granularity that you do for your insurance businesses? Is there an upper limit on what you offer on APR? Secondly, relating to capital on the loans business, I think you said there's a 6% charge and so on the capital of the loans book, and some of it comes from insurance assets. I was just interested, is that because of the Basel treatment? It seems like quite a low capital charge compared to what you would expect for insurance assets that were in other illiquid type investments. And then lastly, on solvency, I think you mentioned your solvency ratio is subject to regulatory approval on the capital add-on. What's the expected timing on that, please? I thought that might have been expected for the first half. Thank you.
Do you want to do loans and we'll come back, Geraint?
Yeah. So taking it in reverse order, the capital, that's a standard banking Basel requirement. So we use a standardised approach to calculate the risk-weighted assets, and we take the Pillar 1 requirement of that. We don't do anything on top of that. And that just mathematically works out at around about 6%. Important to note, that doesn't diversify. So if it was within the loans business, within the insurance business, that would have a diversification benefit as well. But because it's an add-on to the group insurance Solvency II ratio, it doesn't diversify at all. So it's just 6% flat, which I think is something to remember. On pricing, we do have a maximum APR, which is, I think, reflective of the prime space we're operating in. So we are, as I indicated, targeting an overall book APR in the high single digits. So in that context, there is a maximum which is reflected within that. As Scott mentioned, I think on the pricing side, we're trying to develop a couple of competitive advantages. The first is cultural, which is that both from a who we write and the price we charge, we're trying to be quite proactive in managing that, not just because we are a new lender into the market and we are aware of the macroeconomic environment, but just that's something we've learned that Admiral on the insurance side does quite well. And so we have tried to mirror that. And on the technology side, we built our own proprietary in-house pricing capability, which means that we could come in any single morning and adapt the price in a very granular manner for a very specific risk and change that as frequently as we want. And we believe the combination of those two things should allow us to, over time, build a competitive advantage in pricing and risk selection.
The second question is capital add-on. So our capital requirement is based on the standard formula plus the capital add-on. We calculate that internally every quarter, and we report it externally every 6 months. If it changes materially from the previously approved one, then we'll talk to the regulator about getting it reapproved. I'd expect us to be doing that reasonably shortly. It has gone down a fair bit since the last one. So that's part of the story here. So I'd expect that to be done reasonably shortly.
Anyone? Go ahead. Sorry.
John Denham from Morgan Stanley. just one question on motor expense ratio seemed to tick up a little bit. Reason for that and outlook going forward. And then just on loans, you've mentioned bundling with motor insurance.
I'll say that we continue to be very focused on our expense ratio and to be an efficient operator. This year, I will highlight a couple of things. One is the increase in levies, and the other one is just the increasing cost of doing business in the UK in areas like cyber. We have done a very important expense to strengthen our cyber capabilities.
On loans, so the product is to build a great lending business, and one, we take inspiration from the car insurance business in a few ways. And one is that they've got a dedicated, ruthless focus on one product for a very long time. And our competitors don't. Many of them try to do lots of different products. So we see the value chain splintering. And it's splintering in a way where we think the profit centre, which is personal loans and car finance for banks, is an opportunity for other people to get involved in. So that's why we're there. In terms of car insurance, we're talking to millions of customers every year when they're changing their vehicle. And we have a lot of data on those customers that help us get good indications to what type of price they should be getting for their loans. So bundling's not really the way we're thinking about it. We're thinking about talking to our customers about their financing needs at the point they're making the change in their vehicle purchase.
It's Andrew Crean, who's Autonomous. Three questions, if I can. Could you talk a little bit more about the FCA pricing review and the potential risks that you see there? Secondly, in your appendix, you give us sensitivity to changes in the loss ratio, including impacts from changing profit commission terms. But I think the loss ratio is now so high that there is no sensitivity as it comes down 5 points. So it's not really helping us to see how, as years progress, you take more of the profit. I wonder whether you could do something about that. And then finally, coming back onto the loans business, as I understand it, you started this operation as a car loans business, and now half of it is a personal loans business. Why do you think you have better pricing insights than the traditional players in that personal loans business? I think you did admit that they have more access to data.
Yes. So if I start with the FCA pricing review, I'll highlight first the uncertainty. We don't know what is going to come out. We see risk and maybe opportunities. Risk because any change in regulation, it could be, if it's implemented in a way that is similar to every player, I think it could be interesting. But there is always uncertainty when it comes to changes in regulation. Also, any change that will limit our ability to price based on risk factors could have an impact. However, there could also be opportunities. If you look at our motor book, most of it comes from price comparison, where people shop on a very regular basis. About 80% of our customers contact us every single year. And if you look at our household book, actually, it's very recent. We have very very young customers. So it could actually be an opportunity at the end. I will leave it with lots of uncertainty.
On loans.
Loss ratio sensitivity. Maybe I'll pick up with you afterwards, Andrew, just to clarify the question. The extent of the sensitivity will clearly depend on where the individual underwriting year is booked at, and so how much profit can be recognised by moving the loss ratios a couple of points. So maybe I'll pick that up with you afterwards, if that's okay?
Yeah, it's a very simple point. The benefit of 5 points is the same, is five times the benefit of 1 point, whereas if your loss ratio is further down, you begin to see the exponential benefit of improving profit commission. So it provides us no guide in terms of how to model it.
Well, it provides you with a guide to model it if it moves by 5 points. I'll pick up with you later, Andrew.
On loans, we were thinking about data and pricing. It's probably in three areas. So, as I said in the script, we're talking about established. And where we think we can do certainly better than some in established is that we're looking at the raw data, the raw credit data at point of acquisition. So literally hundreds of variables. So there's an opportunity there, I think, to certainly, for a lot of lenders who only look at consolidated scores at point of acquisition, to point an advantage. The second thing on new data sources, we're one of the first, we believe, in the market to work with open banking data. So when I said the traditional data sources or the traditional advantages are reducing, open banking data gives you access to full current account data. And if customers are willing, you're able to assess risk with that information. So that's the second way we're looking at it, and we're investing a lot in that in the second half of the year. And the third is with the Admiral data. And the simple example would be an ally indicator for a car insurance product that has a correlation, as you might expect, with bad loan performance. So there's some links there with regard to Admiral data.
One observation I'd make, having worked closely with the loans team over the last two or three years as we've initially piloted and then decided to go with a loans operation, is that the mental process of pricing insurance, the mental process of pricing a loan, is not as similar as I would have immediately anticipated. But I've taken away from it the view that a combination of a loans pricing culture and an insurance pricing culture is an asset for a lender, and in fact also a combination of a lending and an insurance pricing culture is arguably potentially an asset for the insurance business as well. There's learning for both sides on how traditionally these sectors have tackled risk.
Thank you. So, James Shark from Citi. I had three quick questions, please. Firstly, The best estimate liabilities, I think you previously guided that you would expect the best estimate not to develop as favorably as it has done in the past. 2017, 2018 still seeing very strong development. Could you just run me through what actually is driving that positive development? That'd be helpful, please. Secondly, the whiplash reforms, I think you indicated that it's about a year before you expect those to come in. I was expecting April 2020. Could you just shed some light in terms of that potential delay? And thirdly, just around the Solvency II sensitivities to lower rates. I remember those being far more sensitive to 50 basis point reduction. Could you just clarify what's included in that? Is there a reduction in Ogden rate as well? Thank you.
The first one was the development in ultimate loss ratios. So we have commented that we don't expect these projected loss ratios to improve as much as they would have done in the more distant past. So you have instances in the past where our loss ratios would have improved by 20 or 30 percentage points, and we wouldn't expect that to happen anymore. We frequently comment that we expect our more recent years to be on the cautious side of a best estimate range, and so you see that reflected in the rectangles on slide 14, where some of the years have improved by double digits, and 17 and 18 have improved pretty decently already. I think I said earlier that the reason for a particularly strong first half was some unwind of conservatism that was there 6 months ago, based on the trends that we've seen on 15, 16, 17 years, starting to be more like normal trends after a period of quite stubbornly flat average cost development. And so this half year, I would say, is a more positive half year than usual.
In terms of the timing of the whiplash reform, I tried to leave it a bit vague in the sense that it's about a year, because it could be April, could be October, given the current political climate and some of the priorities, but also the fact that a system needs to be developed. I think there is just certain uncertainty, so we don't know. There could be a delay.
Is it mainly the portal, the online portal, that's the limiting factor around that?
It's one of them, yes.
The final bit was about the sensitivity of 50 basis points moves in interest rates. The reason it was particularly material historically was twofold. Firstly, the much higher expectation for PPO propensity in the positive discount rate environment. With a minus 0.25 discount rate environment, we don't expect to see that many PPOs. And so the longer tail duration of the liabilities is not as material as it once was. There was another part.
Is Ogden included in the sensitivity?
So the that sensitivity reflects the new Ogden rate and a slightly lower propensity of PPOs. The other point is our portfolio is better matched than it was a couple of years ago in terms of asset liability positions.
So the sensitivity is, it does flex the Ogden rate, discount rate as well, on the solvency position.
It assumes that the Ogden discount rate stays the same.
Ah, okay.
And the PPO propensity we've therefore assumed holds.
Okay, thank you.
Through Gehlot, HSBC. Three questions. Could you talk a bit more in terms of what happened to motor rates since the start of Q3, as in you highlighted a couple of stats on ABI, etc. But I just want to understand what happened on the competitive landscape. Have you seen any increases? Secondly, what is the reinvestment rate at this point? What is the investment yield you're getting on your portfolio? And lastly, on compare.com, post the write-down, what's the carrying value there now?
Do you want to do Q3?
Yeah. It's too early to comment. We haven't seen any particular change in trend. Confuse index for the month of July doesn't have an increase, but the Confuse index sometimes changes a bit, so we prefer to take it into quarters than monthly.
And the other 2 points, Compare's carrying value in our books now reflects the net assets of the company, which is about $15 million in total. That's not our assessment of how much the business is worth. That's what's on the balance sheet. And the final point was reinvestment rates are particularly depressing. They started the year pretty good, and they've moved down very materially since then. And I think we're the typical bit of reinvestment of our bond portfolio is 1.3, 1.4, somewhere around there. It was 2 at the start of the year.
Rob Murphy, Edison. On the other income, are you still expecting the instalment income to grow strongly? And how should we think about the margin mix and the impact that's going to have on the net figure, net of internal costs?
Yep. The biggest change in instalment income has been more an accounting change between reinsurance and ourselves, and that's what was mentioned in the slide in green. So if you look at net of the effects of the changes in the reinsurance agreements, there hasn't been any material change in the installment income, and we don't expect any material change going forward. In terms of margin, as I said, when you look at our underwriting, we have one of the best combined ratios in the market, so we tend to get a lot of our profitability coming from there. And we tend to see the profitability of the motor book as a whole, both combined ratio and ancillaries, so there might be changes on where we get the margin.
Sorry, we've got probably one more. Sorry for... Oh, two gone for it. Go for it then.
Okay. Hello, thank you. Phil Ross from Mediobanca. Just a single one from me. You mentioned the pricing increase of 1% in response to the Ogden rate change. Do you have any view on whether you'll need to revisit that once claims start settling at the new rate, or do you think that's fairly final?
We think that is a final number, but how claims evolve is always uncertain. The results is something to consider, which is the possible change in the cost of the reinsurance or excess of loss. That will come for most companies at the beginning of the year. Given that we have a very high retention level, we don't expect a significant impact for us, but it could have a significant impact for other companies. So yes, I will assume there might be another change related to Ogden, at least in the market.
And that was a nice quick question. At the risk of the ire of Marisha, if you have a very short one, I'll take it.
It is short. Just your view, really. I mean, we've heard from most of the listed peers in the last month or so and since the start of the year, and consistently people have been talking about pricing not keeping pace with claims inflation. I just wonder, what is your view on why the market isn't reacting? And is it because there's something we don't see from the non-listed players? Thank you.
I think the conclusion, if you look at all the people who stood up in the last few weeks and talked about how they run their business, they're running them in a disciplined way seeking to offset the impact of the cycle. The implication of that has to be that there are players out there who feel it's an appropriate time to grow, and it probably is fair to say that they tend to be the middle-sized ones. In our experience, there are a number of players who tend to respond a bit too late to market cyclical developments. And we anticipate that they will respond and should have done already. Thank you.